Welcome to the Commonwealth Poetry Podcast,
where we celebrate poetry and the Commonwealth with people from across the Commonwealth.
I'm Giles Brandreth.
And I'm Afra Brandreth.
We're a father and daughter based in London in the UK.
But each fortnight, online or in person, we're exploring a different Commonwealth country. And when we get there, we're going to talk about poetry with someone from that country who cares about poetry, knows about poetry, often writes their own poetry. And they are going to share with us two or three of their favourite poems.
This week, we're discovering Pakistan. Pakistan lies to the northwest of India. Its other neighbours are China, Afghanistan and Iran. It borders the Arabian Sea to the south. Pakistan has a varied climate and geography. It has an area of desert in the west and the Indus River plain in the centre. The east is fertile and has many lakes, and it has vast mountain ranges in the north. It's the home to some of the tallest mountains in the world, including the K2, second only in height to Everest. Afra, give us the facts and figures.
Population is over 220 million, covering an area of 882,000 square kilometres. The capital city is Islamabad. Pakistan joined the Commonwealth in 1947 on partition from India, left in 1972 and rejoined in 1989. English and Urdu are the official languages, although there are a number of languages spoken, and I am hoping that we're going to hear some Urdu poems today.
Oh, good. I hope so, too. I can't wait to find out more. Today, we are actually in the Riverside Studios in London, where we're meeting a doctor and a poet. It's the same person. It's Dr. Javed Sheikh.
Welcome to the Commonwealth Poetry Podcast. We're here today at the Riverside Studios in London, where we're joined by Dr. Javed Sheikh, who is both a doctor and a poet. Javed, you were born in Pakistan before moving to the UK. Before you tell us a little bit about your story and how you came to be here in the UK, we'd love to just hear a little bit about Pakistan.
I found myself in the school. That's the first thing that I can remember. And since then, my father, who was not very academic, and he was a factory owner, and he was very keen on our academic achievements. And we went to the normal school, and then onwards to GCSE, and then onward to medical college. And King Edward Medical College, it was called, and it was established in 1860, and that was in Lahore.
So were you the first person in your family to go on and do further
study? I was the first
person
in my family, but my elder brother was the first graduate of my family. So then I graduated in medicine. And for higher education, I was supposed to come here to London. My father wanted me to get the maximum benefit from the British system of education. And I did my membership and I did my diploma here. And at that time, because the country was breaking in 1971-72, so I stayed back instead of 3 years, and I'm still here after 53 years.
Amazing. So for those of people listening at home who don't know that much about Pakistan, when you talk about it breaking up, can you tell us a little bit about the history of Pakistan?
Pakistan was created from parts of India which had the Muslim the majority areas. And we had East Pakistan, which was in Bengal, and the West Pakistan, which was in the best, comprising mainly of Punjab and Sindh and Balochistan and PKP areas, and Kashmir, half of Kashmir as well. So the parts were, it was ungovernable for 24 years because the one part was away from the other part by about 1,000 miles. And that's why the people in the east thought that every bit of, although they were more in numbers, but they were not getting enough share of Pakistan's wealth. So that's why it was broken up into two pieces. India obviously played a major part in that. And in December 1971, we were separated. So that is mainly what happened.
Take us back to your boyhood. I'm so excited to meet you because my mother, Afra's grandmother, was born in Rawalpindi back in 1914 when it was part of India.
Right.
My mother was the daughter of a British Indian Army officer and a missionary.
Right.
And she lived in Rawalpindi from when she was born up until when she came to Britain to go to university in the 1930s and never really left.
Right.
For her, it was everything. So I can tell you about the beauty of Pakistan at the time, you know, in the 1920s. Yeah. What was it like when you were a little boy in the 1950s?
Well, I was born in the mid-40s, and at that time, when I left Lahore, it was only a population of 1 million. And now I'm told that it is about 8 million people. So eightfold increase in the population of just one town. You can very well imagine how it would be for the other parts. We were East and West Pakistan. We were only 70 million people at the time of 1947. And now just the west part of it is 220 million people.
So it's so grown.
Yeah.
And when you were a boy, was it very much an agricultural economy?
It was an agricultural economy in the mid-50s and 60s. But it has industrialized since. And although education-wise, it has gone beyond anyone's belief. Education-wise, higher education is the norm nowadays. In my father's days, there were not very many learned people in any language, for that matter, whether in English or in Urdu. But nowadays, everyone, particularly the city population, they are very much educated people.
English and Urdu are the two principal languages, but there are many other languages as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Before we ask you to tell us about poetry in your life when you were at school, we know that you came to the United Kingdom in 1968 three years.
That's right.
Was it a special scheme to encourage?
I wanted to do my membership and I wanted to do my diploma and get the maximum benefit out of the education here in London and then go back and hopefully serve my country. But it never happened.
Well, you've only been here 53 years. You can still go back and serve your country. I'm sure you're still very good.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that.
One of the great things is when you were here, you had a family, and you brought along today your daughter, Fatima. So here, Afra and I are father and daughter. So here you are, Javed, a father and daughter. Hello, Fatima.
Hello, hello. Yes.
I mean, what do you know of Pakistan? What does Pakistan mean to you, to a modern person?
Well, Pakistan has always been fun for me because going back on holidays, seeing cousins, and I'm an only child, so being around extended family was always very lovely. Yes, I've seen it grow into a very, very modern place. People's thinkings, the way they behave, it's become a lot more civilized than I once knew when I was a little girl, yes.
Cricket lovers will be excited to know that Fatima is married to Yasser Arafat, who is a very distinguished Pakistani cricketer. Playing in the UK for whom?
Playing in the UK, he's played for many counties, Sussex, Surrey, Lancashire, Hampshire, Somerset. He's been around.
Worcestershire as well.
Yeah, he's been around.
So he's a quality player.
Yes.
So we're excited. Very excited. We're excited to have you both here. Now, Javed, tell us about maybe the poetry of your childhood when you were a little boy.
The poetry of my childhood is more or less the same as it was in the 19th century. It hasn't changed one bit. The only new things that come up is a prose poem. And a prose poem is one of the poems that I'm going to recite. Is like any other prose poem. And Kishwar is one of the poets that she does a lot of prose poems. And Iftikhar also does a lot of prose poems.
So at school, you were taught English poetry or Urdu poetry, Pakistan? What was it when in your day?
In my days, it was pre-medical education was English was a proper subject. And in that, we were told that Wordsworth and the other big Auden and all those poets were the norm of the day, and we used to study quite a lot of those poetries, and there was always a question in our examination about these English poets that we used to more or less worship in a way. But then there was an Urdu side of it, which was non-academic, non-curricular, you see, sort of. And I got into the habit of doing that because my father was, although he had accumulated lots of books, but he was unable to read English. So that's...
And in school, would lessons be taught in Urdu?
The lesson would be taught in Urdu in the early... up to GSCA. Mm-hmm. But after that, it was all proper English because our medical education was in proper English. So we had no choice but to learn English.
But to learn it.
Yeah.
And in your family home, what would you have spoken with your parents?
Oh, in my family home, we would speak Punjabi. Between me and my brothers and sisters, we would speak Punjabi with our parents as well.
So you're multilingual then. Well, you have to pick up a number of languages to communicate
And to understand Urdu, you have to learn Arabic as well as Persian a little bit because quite a lot of words are similar in Urdu. So,
what is the origin of the Urdu language, is it?
Urdu language is made up mainly of Turkish, Arabic, and Sanskrit, as well as quite a lot of words of Punjabi as well. So this was a language invented in a way by the British because they wanted their army to be of the same... it was a lingua franca that people...
So they needed a universal language.
They needed a universal language. Mm-hmm. And that's why... Our main poets preferred Urdu. And now it's a well-established language because it's nearly 300 years that we have had.
So there's prose poetry, which is not rhyming, I assume. It's like prose.
Yeah.
There is traditional poetry that you say in your boyhood had been the same for 100 years or more.
Yeah.
And there's a third kind of poetry, verse.
Which is a poem. Like any other love poems, but they rhyme. The difference between the ghazal, which is the main thing that most the poets practice, they rhyme in the end. They have a radif, which is last couple of words should be exactly the same in Urdu language, although... the meaning of every couplet is different. The meaning and the thought behind every couplet is different.
So this is called a ghazal?
Ghazal.
Ghazal,
yeah.
And this is a very popular form of poetry.
Yeah,
it's the very popular
form. Most popular, yes.
People are writing a ghazal where every couplet is a separate thought.
Yeah.
And they almost rhyme.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ah, very good. Mm. Excellent. So I hope you're going to hear
And it can be small verses or it can be a larger verse. But the main important thing is that it must rhyme, and it must have the last word should be exactly the. It should rhyme as well as the last couple of words should be
the same words. Yes.
And are there certain themes that bother Ghazal?
I've mostly heard love poems, Ghazals, yeah, but right. They're often quite deep. But
we like deep love poetry. That's going to be good.
And Javed, you yourself are a poet. What types of poetry do you write?
I do free verse because it's so easy. You see?
Easy for you, yeah. Not say, for all
free
of us.
Verse as opposed, so we have prose poetry, yeah. Free verse, and then yeah. We have the Ghazal.
Yeah.
So you are...
And then yeah. You have the lyrics in a geet, which is a song.
They're mainly for songs, yes. Yeah.
And of course, this is a great tradition of the medical person who is also a poet. We have John Keats, who trained as a doctor, probably yeah. Our most famous yeah. poet to be a medical. Are there... Yeah. Other Pakistani doctors who are also poets? Or you?
Yeah, there are quite a lot of them. You see, Hilal Farid is one of them. And then there is Adil Siddiqui here. They are living here in Britain at the moment. So they are quite well-versed in it. The main important thing is that they write ghazals.
Javed, when did you start writing poetry? What sparked your interest?
I was the editor of a magazine which used to be every 6 months in the medical school. And because I was editing, and then I started writing poetry mainly. So that's how I started. But
And why do you write poetry? This is
to express yourself. One way or the other, whether you are doing it right or not. But every poem has got a different thought behind it. And each time when you are writing, you are expressing yourself in such a way that it hasn't been done in the past.
Well, should we have an example now? What do you
love
think?
To.
Can you give us one of your poems? This is you. I'm billing you
right.
as the John Keats of You're Pakistan,
right.
The medical man who is going to give us a poem.
Right.
What is the poem going to be? What is its theme?
It says ek ajeeb khwahish, that means a strange wish.
A strange wish.
And you're going to read it to us first in Urdu, and then maybe the English translation.
Yeah,
that'd be wonderful.
I can do that. Sannata, gehra sannata, ghata top andhera, yakh basta hawaein, hu ka alam. Ek wadi, ek band kamra, kamre mein ek palang, main tan tanha. Phir tez hawaein, jhakkad, girte hue darakhton ki aawazein, toofani barish, maazi ki jaan leva yaadein. Mazi se ek ubarta ek chehra, ek manus chehra, ek haseen chehra, andheron se nikal ke meri taraf aaye, ghata top andhere mein meri taraf aaye, tatol kar mujhe pehchane, mere seene par sar rakh de, aur siskiyan bhar kar khoob roye. That's the end of the poem. Now I'll translate it in English. A strange wish. Silence. Total silence. Absolute darkness. Real cold shiver in the air. No sound whatsoever. A mountain valley. A room with doors closed. A bed in this room. And me all alone. And then suddenly, a huge whirlwind, sounds of falling trees, a severe thunderstorm, and memories of frightening past. A flash from the past, and absorbing old acquaintance, a long-lost friend, out of darkness comes to me. Out of darkness comes to me, feels me with her fingers, and lays her head on my chest, sobs gently, and then cries her heart out. That was it.
Wow. That certainly is deep and yeah. full of feeling.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us the background to that? How did you come to write that?
A background of that is a sort of a love affair that I had in my teens, and I was still longing for her, you see, and it didn't materialize, and so that's why.
Well, lucky for Fatima, it didn't materialize.
It's very poignant. It's wonderfully poignant.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Who are Pakistan's kind of best-known poets? Who should we, you know, make
at
sure we go
moment,
and look up?
At the moment, living poets is Iftikhar Arif.
And Kishwar we're going to hear something shortly yeah. by him.
And there's Kishwar as well. But in the recent past, we have had quite a lot of people like Iqbal, Faiz, Faraz, and these kind of poets, Mohsen Ehsan and Khurshid Rizvi, these are the living poets, they're still living. So,
would you say the written word, poetry, literature is a big part of culture in
Pakistan? It is. People are, they are reading novels here. People are buying poetry books all the time.
And they have poetry gatherings as well. They get together yeah. and they, people recite their poetry yeah. one by one. Lots, about 20 poets would get together and they'd have an audience as well. So
poetry slams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. They're called mushairas.
Yeah.
And yes, it's a big thing. It's quite an event, a mushaira, yes.
And what poetry, Fatima, would you read?
Oh.
When you do read poetry, what kind of poetry?
Oh, probably English poetry.
That's
yes.
okay.
Yeah. Yes.
We're inclusive. That's the joy of the Commonwealth Poetry Podcast. We're all reading each
yes.
other's poetry.
Yes.
But you've got in front of you a collection by somebody you describe
Kishwar
as
Naheed.
Yes.
Who is she? Tell us about her, what we know about her.
Her name is Kishwar Naheed. She's also a very renowned poet, and she's... She does write a lot of feminist poetry.
We'd love it.
Yes.
What do you read us?
This poem is called it's in Urdu. It's called "Ghas to Mujh Jaisi Hai," which translates to "The grass is like me." I'll just read the English version. The grass is also like me. It learns to love life only after being crushed under feet. By becoming wet, does it mean to show modesty's warmth or the heat of passion? The grass is also like me. As soon as it lifts its head, the mower, promising to turn it to velvet, levels its rising head. Yes, it's...
Well, your dad chose that poem. Why did you think that one would be a good one to read?
Chose that poem because, one, it has got a thought behind it, and Kishwar did herself spoke to me about this particular poem.
She's somebody you knew.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about her and how you came to know her.
She is a poet who was born in India and then migrated to Pakistan as a child. And she lives in Islamabad at the moment. And she's quite famous because her work has been translated into other languages as well, like French and Italian, as well as in English. So...
And how did you meet her?
I think through mutual friends.
In Pakistan. Whenever you are going to these mushairas, or the poetry meetings, you always meet like-minded people. And that's how I met her. And whenever she's coming to London, she always stays with us. So
amazing.
Yeah, very good. Well, that couldn't be more exciting. Yeah. Have you got one more poem to share with us?
Yeah.
And tell us who this is by and why you've chosen it.
This one is called Mohabbat Ki Ek Nazm.
And who is it by?
It's by Iftihar Arif, who has been on the literary societies of Pakistan. He has been heading those Academy of Letters in Pakistan and Urdu language forums in Pakistan. And he is a civil servant, quite a highly placed one, and he's just retired. So he is writing this poem. He says, Mohabbat ki ek nazm. Meri zindagi mein bas ek kitab hai, ek charaag hai, ek khwab hai, aur tum ho. Ye kitab o khwab ki manzilein, main chahta tha tumhare saath basar karun. Yehi kul asasa-e zindagi hai, isi ko zyade safar karun. Kisi aur simt nazar karun, to meri dua mein asar na ho. Mere dil ke jada-e khush khabar pe bajuz tumhare kabhi kisi ka guzar na ho. Magar is tarah ke tumhein bhi iski khabar na ho. You see, all these rhyme, although in English it may not be, but in Urdu they all rhyme. Is ehtiyat mein sari umr guzar gayi, wo jo arzu thi kitab o khwab ke saath tum bhi sharik ho, wohi mar gayi. Isi kashmakash ne kai sawal uthaye hain, wo sawal jin ka jawab meri kitab mein hai na khwab mein. Mere dil ke jada e khush khabar ke rafiq, tum hi batao ke phir ye karobar e hayat kiske hisab mein. Meri zindagi mein bas ek charaag hai, ek kitab hai, ek khwab hai, aur tum ho. So that's the concluding.
Well, I don't understand a word of it. It sounds very evocative. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a sweet language.
Yes, it's like music, isn't it? You don't need to understand every word.
Yeah. What it says is mainly about a beloved that you are talking about. So it says a love poem, but then exclusively you are yearning for her rather than yearning for anybody else's. And you are trying to write and show that this is what you actually want.
Is this a reflection of you two, the fact that all these are love poems, or is this actually, to be serious, a reflection of Pakistani poetry? Much of it is concerned with love. A lot of it is.
But not necessarily love for the other person, love for God, love for also, yes, but love is the central aspect.
Well,
yes,
we love love, so yeah, give us this translation.
I will translate it. And a love poem. All I have in life is a book, a lamp, a dream, and you. Through the phases between the book and the dream, I wish to be with you. With this, the entire possession of my life, I desired to equip my journey, wishing my prayers to be denied, lest they seek another. On the tiding-filled road of my heart, I long to see none but you, but in a way indiscernible even to you. Life passed by in such discretion. The very desire for you to share the book and the dream faded away. It's this uncertainty that has brought forth so much to question that cannot be answered either by my book or my dream. Companion of the tiding-filled road of my heart, so could you say, how do we reckon this affair of life? All I have in life is a book, a lamp, a dream, and you. See,
Love it, a book, a lamp, a life, a dream, and you.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
It doesn't translate very well, but although in Urdu, you see, if you want to translate something, you have to be a master of both the languages. And that's unfortunate. And the last one that I'm going to read is going to be translated by Professor Ralph Russell. He was Indian-born. He was went into the army, Indian, British Indian Army, and that's why he knew lingua franca very well. And he was a professor in SOAS, where Fatima studied, and he's
the School of Oriental and African Studies.
African
in London,
studies, yeah, in London, part of London University, yes.
When you choose to write poetry, do you write it in Urdu?
I write usually? In Urdu.
So
always.
Why would you choose to write in Urdu rather than in the other languages that you speak? What is it that it offers, do you think?
Because I still think in Urdu.
Okay.
That's my problem. I mean, although spending 53 years here in this country, I still can't think in English.
My father always says to me, the language in which you count in,
yeah.
That's your, because, yes. So if he's ever counting anything, it's always in Urdu. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. So,
and that's the one that we always thought of writing in. Although there are but certain poets who write in English, and Saki Faruqi is one of them in this country. Iftikhar Arif is also the one who writes in English as well. But I always write in Urdu.
So you're going to give us one more poem, and this is the one...
This is a ghazal.
Ah, this is a ghazal.
Yeah.
Where every couplet is a different thought.
Yeah. And it is,
they have to rhyme, and the last couplet will be two. The last two words will be the same words.
Yeah.
I've learned what a ghazal is.
And you know, the couplet can be a different thought behind it and different ghazal, but it must rhyme. So
wonderful.
That's exciting.
So this ghazal is translated by Professor Ralph Russell, and it says, اب بھی توہین اطاعت نہیں ہوگی ہم سے اب بھی توہین اطاعت نہیں ہوگی ہم سے دل نہیں ہوگا تو بیعت نہیں ہوگی ہم سے Now, this is easy because I can translate this couplet in English separately. Because every couplet has got a different meaning and different thought behind it.
When people read ghazals, they repeat a lot. Yeah. So the same line they'll read twice when they're reciting it.
Oh, yes. Interesting. Yeah. So you actually get the point.
Yes.
Yeah. To flout my God's commands, that is too much for me. To pledge false fealty, that is too much for me. Now, because Ralph Russell knew the ghazal, and that's why his translation is this word is being repeated all the time. That is too much for me. Roz ek taza kaseeda nayi tashbeeb ke saath. Roz ek taza kaseeda nayi tashbeeb ke saath. Risk bar haq hai, ye khidmat nahi hogi humse. To write fresh odes, produce fresh praises every day. I earn my bread. That service is too much for me. Dil ke maabood jabinon ke khudaon se alag. Dil ke maabood jabinon ke khudaon se alag. Aise alam mein ibadat nahi hogi humse. With empty heart, with no desire to bow to him, and by him it means the God himself, to worship in such wise, that's too much for me. See, because every couplet has got a different meaning and a different thought behind it, but it rhymes. So, Ujrat-e-ishq wafa hai to hum aise mazdoor. Ujrat-e-ishq wafa hai to hum aise mazdoor. Kuch bhi kar lein, ye mehnat nahi hogi humse. To earn love's wages only if I show loyalty, that is kind of love that is too much for me. See, the first verse I'm reading twice, and that is how it is read in the Mushairas, and in that's the way it's. Har nayi nasl ko ek taza madine ki talash. Har nayi nasl ko ek taza madine ki talash. Sahibo, ab koi hijrat nahi hogi humse. Each generation seeks a new Medina. True, but friends, another exile is too much for me. Sukhan aarai ki surat to nikal sakti hai. Sukhan aarai ki surat to nikal sakti hai. Par ye chakki ki mushakkat nahi hogi humse. Yes, I can find a way to practice poetry, but risk hard labor? No, that is too much for me. So, I have given you a flavor of ghazal as well as different kind of poetry, the free verse as well as the bound verse.
And that is not too much for us. We can cope with that. I think it's very interesting. Yeah. We've learned a lot, haven't we? Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah.
And often in these mushairas, people will shout from the audience, repeat, repeat.
Oh, they love it so much.
They love it so much.
Well, that's
so,
because it becomes hypnotic. I mean, we were ready to join in. That is too much for me. By the end of the show, they're all calling out together. Yes. So people love words and language.
Oh, yes.
Yes, you would sing along to a song. They would read along with the poets as he's reading on stage.
And these are the modern poets. Are there that we should send people away to look up? Are there poets from earlier times?
Yes, there are quite a lot of them. Mir, Khwaja Mir Dard, Ghalib, and these are the Iqbal, those poets who are deceased. And there are quite a lot of other minor poets, Fana Kanpuri, Ibrahim Zawk, and those which were in the 19th century, second half of the 19th century.
But I would like to add that, the older poets, the language is far more difficult. So the modern poets, it's much easier to understand their poem. Just like, I don't know, Shakespeare would be quite difficult to understand for a modern person. So, yes, it's difficult. So unless you really enjoy poetry, people who are learning it at school, it's not their favourite subject because it's very tough to...
Well, Fatima, now we've met you, I happen to know that today is your birthday. So as a birthday present for all of us, would you choose one more short poem by Pakistan's famous feminist poet to share with us as a final a birthday treat for us? Your father is pointing you in the right direction because...
Yes. I don't understand poetry too well, so...
She's obviously a feminist poet.
Yeah.
Does it tend to be that it's more men reading and writing poetry, or is kind of modern Pakistan having more of a mix?
The poetry that females are writing at the moment is quite aggressive and quite...
Fatima's putting faces, implying that this is... Well, he's speaking for himself and his generation.
That's true.
You see, because in my generation, there was always used to be the men poets.
Yeah.
And it's very new phenomena since the early 20th century that women have started writing.
So perhaps the poetry is part of kind of breaking those barriers.
Well, those taboos as well.
Or starting being published.
Yeah.
Because, of course, in terms of English poetry, there were not many published English poets much before the 19th century or 18th century anyway.
Yes.
But they may well have been writing, but never getting the work out.
Yes.
What is the place of women in Pakistan today? Is it good? Is it
Yes. I mean, it can always be better, but yes, it's much better than than it used to be. Yes, and but I've heard it's actually it was Pakistan was far more modern in the 1950s. Then there came a dip.
Ah.
And now it's going back to yes. And
when
now
she was born in 80s, so when she was born in this country, so you can well imagine that she has got a different outlook than I have personally.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's the joy of being different people, different experiences. Yeah. So share with us, Fatima, the poem that we've got.
Yes, it's called The Auction House.
The taste, Neelam Ghar in Urdu.
In Urdu, yeah. Yes, Neelam Ghar, and translated as The Auction House. The taste of death drools from his lip in the form of words. Masking hate with kisses, he leaves bruises on my face to assert his right to use my body as he pleases. The assertion of right is something else. The desire to assert it covers subjugation under its canopy. The desire to assert it hides every lie and hypocrisy under the veil of love. But now, under the veil, the face can be seen even more clearly.
Wow, so that's really
tough stuff. Yeah. That's saying it like it is. My. And again, that echoing a line.
Yeah.
So the, obviously, repetition is one of the keynotes. Yes. Goodness. Well, this is the joy of the Commonwealth Poetry Podcast. We begin not really knowing anything, and we end up half an hour later having been introduced to prose poetry, verse poetry, rizzles.
Yeah.
Am I pronouncing it right?
Rizzles.
The feminist poet of Pakistan and traditional poetry.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Javed, I do this program in Britain called Just a Minute. It's a challenge to talk about a subject for just a minute.
On the radio.
On the radio.
Yeah.
And in fact, it is
and
listened
I've heard
to.
It many
I know
times.
It's even listened to in Pakistan.
Yeah.
Could you, I'm going to challenge you and then your daughter, Fatima, not to play the game, but to try and encapsulate for us the Pakistan of your boyhood. You were born in the 1940s, so you will remember the 1950s.
Yeah.
What was Pakistan when you were a boy like? What was it like going to school? What did you have for breakfast? Just give me a flavour of your boyhood in Pakistan.
You see, at that time when I was in school, it was written everywhere, Urdu likhiye, Urdu boliye, Urdu padhiye. That means read Urdu, write Urdu, and speak Urdu. So that is what I was, as far as the poetry is concerned, that is how I was brought up. So that was the main reason. But later on, in the 60s, when we were in medical college and others, institutions in the University of Punjab and all that, English became the main language that we used to study.
You came from a middle-class family in Pakistan, but you and your brother were the first two graduates in your
family. My brother was the first person to graduate in the whole family, and extended family, I mean, not just our family.
And your forebears, was it an agricultural life they led? What sort of...
No, they were industrialists, but they were... they had multiple factories, cotton ginning and pressing factories. They used to send the cotton to Lancashire mills here, and the Lancashire mills used to disentangle the cotton and make the clothes that was sold in back in...
And interestingly, I mean, I think having merely Googled it, still the main exports of Pakistan are linen, suits, jackets, trousers,
That's
dresses.
Right. That's right. That's still there.
And it's interesting.
Yeah.
And what would, when you were a boy, what was the kind of typical day like? Did you, you'd get up, you'd go, would you go off to school?
There was very little entertainment. There were walks that you could go to, and if you are very good, then you used to be taken to multiple fairs and things like that, but to another town maybe. Some people in Lahore have not seen anywhere else in Pakistan. I mean, they were so travel restricted. That's why the languages, the Punjabi and Sindhi and Balochi, they developed separately.
Very regional.
Very regional. Very regional.
Yeah. That was the need for the audio
and the
to be
the and the language. Bonding was because of the religion, and the bonding was because of people who used to propagate religion. So that's how we.
Amazing. And
so
obviously,
now, yes. Now, similar challenge. Yeah. You give us your Pakistan.
Yeah,
Fatima,
my experience
up in the 90s. Or
yeah, my experience. I mean, I only ever go back to the cities. In the city, English is really encouraged. Really, a lot in schools. My cousins also, we're not, they tell us off if we're speaking Urdu in the school. It's really encouraged to speak. And, you know, people, if you don't know English, you know, you're made fun of, things like that. So English is, it's really stressed upon that you should know English. Yes, culturally, we always go back to Lahore, which is Punjab, but if you go literally from one city to the other, the culture is completely different, and they have the regional languages. The language is a lot different. My husband's from Rawalpindi. When they speak their own regional language, I don't understand a word that they're saying, although I consider my Urdu to be quite good, but still I don't understand anything. So it's very different from region to region. But yes, as I said, I've grown up in a very sort of English-dominated a family. So,
so when you go, you're almost a tourist, really, in Pakistan.
Yes, 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 absolutely. So.
Only as a tourist.
Yeah,
yes, particularly her children, you see.
Yes.
9 and 5.
Because I still speak Urdu, but my children, they don't. So, yes, yeah, so we're struggling to teach them the language. It's a tough one, and as you know, the script is completely different. So it's not like
incomprehensible.
We write from right to left rather than from left to right.
Yes, it's the Arabic script. So
well, it's amazing how much families can change from generation to generation,
right.
And new experiences.
Yes, and that's totally not just because he moved here. Even if I go back, not many of my generation know Urdu that well, so it's
although
a shame.
It's still one of the official languages. But it's
not encouraged.
We can see that for commercially, English now, there are more people in the world who have English as a second language than as a first language.
Yes.
Commercially, any application that you give in any department is always in English.
In English, yes.
Very, very few written things. I mean, we used to write letters to each other, to my mom or to my dad, and they were in Urdu. But otherwise, every official thing is in English. I mean, even the judiciary, they use English. Everyone uses English.
And Pakistan is a member of the Commonwealth. It's one of 56 countries. Does that mean anything to you as somebody originally from Pakistan?
It's like a family, and we are very family-oriented people anyway. So when people tell us that it's like a family, then we embrace that.
Well, 220 million people in Pakistan, and we're so grateful that we've managed to find one brilliant Pakistani poet here in the UK.
Thank
you so much for coming and speaking to us today, and thank you to Fatima.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, it's the Family Commonwealth Poetry Podcast. That's it for this podcast. Our thanks to Dr. Javed Sheikh and Fatima Sheikh, who chose to read
A Strange Wish by Dr. Javed Sheikh, a love poem by Iftikhar Arif, Ghazal by Iftikhar Arif, translated by Ralph Russell, The Grass is Like Me by Kishwa Naheed, and The Auction House, also by Kishwa Naheed.
Join us next time when we'll be exploring another Commonwealth country with more poetry from the Commonwealth.
The Commonwealth Poetry Podcast is presented by Giles Brandreth and Afra Brandreth, and produced by the University of Chester. Our special thanks to them and to the Royal Commonwealth Society.
And of course to you for listening.